Brave New World.
Hello, welcome to Brave New World programme, John Harrison. A report has been published recently documenting the global population of flying insects as having decreased by 75% in the last 25 years. If this is true, it's difficult to underestimate the importance of this. To help us understand what's going on, I welcome to the programme Dave Golson, Professor of Life Sciences at the University of Sussex in the United Kingdom. Welcome to the programme, Professor Golson.
Hi.
Now, can you please put this in some kind of perspective? Why are flying insects so important?
Well, most insects are flying insects, and insects make up the bulk of life on Earth. About two-thirds of all the species that we know of are insects, and they do so many different things. It's hard to know where to start, but as a quick answer, insects include almost all pollinators, so three-quarters of the crops people grow around the world, the three-quarters of the types of crop need pollinating by something, so without flying insects, we wouldn't have strawberries, pumpkins, coffee, chocolate, you name it. Life would be pretty miserable, and we wouldn't be able to feed everybody. So that's a pretty good reason to be concerned. But then they do other things as well. They recycle dung, they keep the soil healthy, they're predators of crop pests.
Yeah.
They're food for the majority of other animals on Earth. So, you know, many bird species, bats, hedgehogs, lots of small mammals, all eat insects. So you took away the insects, essentially, life on Earth would collapse.
You're saying, or the report's saying, that the population of these insects has been decimated. I mean, how do we know? How accurate is the research, and how seriously should we take this?
Well, we certainly should be taking it very seriously, because clearly it does have massive implications for all of us. Wherever we live, you know, even if you're in the middle of a city, that you still need food, and it has to come from somewhere.
Mm.
So the evidence is patchy. Actually, there are so many species of insects, and the large majority of time aren't being monitored by anybody. But we do have good data for some groups. Particularly butterflies are the best studied group of insects, and we know that they've been in steady decline now for many decades.
Mm-hmm.
We have reasonable data in the UK for moths, and one or two other European countries monitor their moths. They're declining. We know that bees are in decline.
Yeah.
But this new study is kind of unique in that it just looks at all flying insects based on these things called malaise traps, which look a bit like a tent, and they basically just catch any flying insect.
Yeah.
And the data actually refer to the weight of flying insects caught per day in these traps, which were set up all over Germany. So it's restricted to Germany, the sampling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we found this 75% drop over 26 years in the weight of insects caught per day per trap, basically. Now, whether that can be extrapolated to other countries is a matter of debate. But so far as we can see, Germany isn't profoundly different to the UK or France. Or wherever.
Right, so we don't know really if it's global, so my introduction was perhaps a little bit incorrect. We can't say for certain that the same thing is happening over the vast wheat fields and the prairies in Canada or for that matter, over the vast spaces of land in Russia, which are now being turned over again to agriculture, as that's coming back in here now. But let's just say that it is happening. But I mean, I've read reports about the bees population, you know, having decreased 5 years ago, but we're still eating food. You know, the pollination is still going on. Is there a sort of, it can decrease the number of these insects, but it doesn't get critical until a certain stage, and then you have to sort of, you know, move to another planet or something.
Well, yeah, let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Yeah.
Lots of species, just in Europe, there are about 2,000 species of bee, and there are lots of other insects that contribute to pollination. And it's clear that at the moment, most crops are getting pollinated. We're not seeing massive crop failures because there aren't enough bees. But the concern is that that may not be too far away. And if we wait until we start to see crops failing in the fields before we do anything. So, we shouldn't be complacent just because at the moment things haven't gone disastrously wrong. The evidence suggests that, you know, that day will come, whether it's this year, next year, or in 10 years' time, we're not really sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a populations of pollinators in particular keep declining, then there will come a point where there aren't enough of them.
Yeah, and the size that you're talking about, the time period, you know, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, that would seem to me to make your task of convincing decision makers slightly easier than some of the climate change scientists who are using timescales which may measure into hundreds, if not thousands of years. You know, I believe you more. I can believe you, what you're saying more easily, because I know that you're talking about real traps in a real field in Germany, and the weight of real insects. It's difficult to get, for me to get my head around the mathematical formulas which are used to calculate change in temperature and so on. But what chance is there of you persuading, with your new research, people who make decisions as far as agriculture is concerned?
Well, so it is easy to get pretty despondent as a you know, someone who's a biologist who studies bees and butterflies and so on, watching these things slowly disappear. But there are some positive moves. The European Union is going to be debating very soon a complete ban on certain types of insecticides, things called neonicotinoids, which have been linked as being part of the problem that insects face. Mm-hmm. In the modern world. And you know, that's a step in the right direction. And just recently, Michael Gove, the UK's Environment Secretary, did quite a spectacular U-turn for the British government in announcing, just this was just about a month ago, that the UK will be supporting these proposed bans on neonicotinoid insecticides, which the UK has previously been against any further bans. Mm-hmm. So, and he specifically cited the 75% decline study as one of the reasons why he'd changed his mind.
Right.
So there's a nice example of you know, politicians seeming to be taking this seriously.
Yeah.
We've got a long way to go, though. You know, just banning a couple of pesticides isn't going to
No.
turn things around, I'm afraid.
No, right. Okay, well, let's talk some more about that after a short break.
Brave New World.
Welcome back to Brave New World programme. Today I'm talking about the devastation of the flying insect population and what this means for us human beings, with Dave Goldson, Professor of Life Sciences at the University of Sussex in the United Kingdom. Now, we just started talking about one of the causes, and that would be pesticides. What else do you recognise, can you identify now as being the cause of this dramatic change in the number of flying insects?
Well, I guess the big picture is that we've lost an awful lot of habitat that used to be here, and we've turned a very large proportion of the surface of the globe over to farming. And the way we farm now, the modern kind of industrial approach to farming with big monocultures of crops, mm-hmm. lots of pesticides, lots of fertilizers and so on, it basically makes most of farmland is really inhospitable to most forms of life. Nothing much can live in a big field of wheat, sadly.
Right.
Well, obviously we need to grow food. We've got to feed 7 billion of us, and, you know, soon to be 9 or 10 billion of us. And that requires farming, absolutely. But the way we're farming at present is one of the primary drivers for the loss of biodiversity around the globe,
mm-hmm.
which, ironically, in a way, it threatens the very system that's destroying it, because, of course, farming needs, amongst other things, pollinators.
Right.
So we need to somehow solve this kind of conundrum.
So it's not just pesticides then, is it? Because I should imagine...
No, not at
mm-hmm.
all.
Yeah.
You know, if you destroy all the flowery meadows and other habitats, and if you think on a global scale, you know, we're still chopping down tropical forests and replacing them with oil palm plantations and so on.
In the name of consumable and sustainable energy, by the way, you know.
Well, yeah, that's debatable indeed.
Yeah.
But obviously the needs of the human race put a lot of pressures on the planet, whether it's for energy or food or whatever. And, you know, our environment is suffering. We are in the midst of a global mass extinction event. It isn't just insects that are disappearing, of course.
You
know, we're seeing birds rapidly declining and so on around the world.
Yeah.
And my personal view is, you know, we need to radically rethink what the heck we're doing. You know, if we carry on down this route, then in 40, 50 years' time, our children or grandchildren will inherit a pretty sad world with, you know, most of the natural beauty will be gone, and lots of the natural resources will have been used up.
Oh, don't worry. We'll have another planet by then. We can just go and do the same thing there. You know?
Well, if Elon Musk gets his way, we'll all be living on Mars. But I don't really see that happening just yet. And it actually, it slightly scares me that I think people might take that seriously. As, well, let's not worry because we'll fix it. Or if not, we'll fly off to another planet. But, you know, as there was an interesting, rather neat catchphrase I saw the other day. There is no planet B. And, you know, there isn't, realistically. You know, a few people might go to live on Mars in a dome, but I don't think we can export billions of us to Mars. So we need to look after the planet we've got.
And even if we do, what are we going to feed ourselves on there? You know, anyway.
Indeed. You know, we look at it another way. We inherited this really spectacularly beautiful planet with all these amazing creatures on it. You know, why on earth aren't we doing a better job of looking after it?
Yeah. If this sort of industrial type agriculture doesn't work, what would work, in your opinion? Would we need to go back to kind of like a community scale kind of farming operation, a small local communities engaging in local crop production, you know, without the mass effect? But would that be able to feed the, as you said, the increasing population?
I think it could.
Mm.
So, you know, there are alternative ways of growing food. If we take, for example, organic agriculture as one possibility, that the yields are lower, roughly 20% lower than conventional farming.
Yeah.
But if we could, for example, reduce meat consumption, which is one of the, you know, it is a very inefficient way of feeding people, and we could reduce food waste, whereby we currently waste about a third of the food that we grow in the world, then actually feeding everyone via organic farming would be perfectly plausible.
Mm-hmm.
I would go a step further, and I think looking at sort of small-scale farming and what that has to offer in terms of sustainability is the way forward. Moving towards local food production, getting more people back onto the land. It's really interesting. If you look at during the Second World War, Brit produced 10% of its food requirements from 1% of the land through encouraging people to grow their own fruit and veg in allotments in their back gardens.
Yeah.
And that system of food production is amazingly productive. You can get in the region of four times as much food off an allotment than a farmer does from a you know, conventional industrial agriculture.
Yeah.
But it's much more labor intensive. That's the cost is you've got someone has to hand weed and grow all the different crops amongst each other and so on.
You're talking somebody who lives in Russia, and there are times here in the 90s when it was actually quite the early 90s, late 80s rather, it's quite difficult to find anything to buy in the shops, you know. And there's this wonderful thing here called the dacha, you know, the dacha, and people grow food in their gardens in the dacha, and they still do. And that is part of sort of the late middle age Russian kind of psyche still. It's very real. But we've lost that, haven't we? Completely lost that in the West.
We have. In a similar way in the UK, I think many people, you know, wouldn't have a clue where to go about growing their own carrot or whatever.
Right.
But it's not that complicated, and that's not knowledge that couldn't be rebuilt. Mm. And, you know, there are currently in the UK, there are 90,000 people on waiting list to get an allotment, but they can't get one because the land is all tied up under other uses.
Yeah.
But if we were to really encourage that, and, you know, perhaps use some of the, in Europe at least, some of the very large amounts of farm subsidies that go largely to support industrial farming, and instead use that to support small-scale production and, you know, train people to grow carrots and so on, and provide them with the land, then that could certainly go a long way towards solving the problem.
Well, it's frightening, and you know, the thing that frightens me most of all, as I hear I'm in Moscow doing these radio programs, mostly we're talking about politics and global problems, but this is the real problem, isn't it? I mean, take all the potential wars and all the politics, international relations problems aside, what is really happening is that flying insects are dying. And without flying insects, we can't pollinate our food and we die then.
Absolutely. I endlessly try to say to politicians, if they'll ever listen to me, you know, worrying about the economy is irrelevant. If we don't look after the environment, the economy will collapse whatever you do. We really need to get people to take this seriously somehow.
But it would take a change in consciousness. It would take, I'm afraid it would take a political will, because it would demand break up probably of monopolistic, you know, cooperative thinking about agriculture, giving the land back to people. It would demand an awful lot of changes, and I don't think that better political structures would be able to handle that.
I'm probably optimistic to even dream that such things are possible. And clearly, yeah, there are big, powerful lobbies who benefit from the current system and would not be enthusiastic about my alternative approach to feeding the world.
Okay, well, we've talked about a lot of different subjects and about none in great detail, unfortunately. I hope that I'll have that opportunity with you again in the future. Return to the subject.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
So thank you very much indeed, Dave Gawson, Professor of Life Sciences at the University of Sussex. And thank you, listeners, for letting me frighten you once again with another Brave New World theme.